You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's a race week, Tim, and even though it is cold and my hair's a mess, thanks to the wind outside, I do appreciate that. Thank you, wind. It was like beautiful in Toronto yesterday. Now it's cold and gray. We do have a race week, and when it's a race week, it's always sunny. Suzuka is on the calendar. We're all very excited. And Tim, you know, I think the thing that is so interesting about this particular race, obviously the focus on Yuki Tsunoda, but I think on the V-Carb or Racing Bulls or whatever you want to call it team, there have been rumors upon rumors upon rumors, everything from they've made Daniel Ricciardo a deal that if he doesn't improve his performance, Liam Lawson's in, to Liam Lawson saying, listen, Red Bull, if you can't find me a spot, I appreciate it. I want to race for you, but I'm going to race for somebody else. There's so much going on here, Tim, with this team. And of course, obviously being in Japan, being Yuki Tsunoda's home turf, he's going to want to put in a good race. So I think I want to start with the Daniel Ricciardo rumors, just because I know that you can pretty much refute them, right? All the reports that people are saying about them giving a some sort of ultimatum are BS.
I mean, he has to be given a length of time before the team can evaluate simply anything. I mean, he's Daniel Ricciardo. He's a race winner. He's won Grand Prix in Formula One. And to sit there and to say that you've got XYZ number of races to get something in line is, yeah, that's not totally accurate. I mean, it is the Red Bull Racing program. So we know that at any moment, anything can happen, Adam. Like, we know that. That's not new. But at the same time, he is Daniel Ricciardo. He does bring a wealth of experience. Has the last few years for him been a bit of a struggle? Well, yeah, they have. But you have to also take into consideration what he's done in the past. I think one of the things for Daniel, and the team will get a better understanding of what his issues actually are, is the more he drives the car, the more they're going to figure things out. For Laurent Mekies, he needs to give Daniel Ricciardo a better car, and he's even admitted that. That's the guy who is running the team now down at RB. And so that, Adam, is kind of like where you kind of have to start. You have to start with Laurent Mekies, and then once he says something like that, that's where the leadership is with this team at the moment. And so once you start to hear something different from him, that's when you know things may change for Daniel Ricciardo.
Well, so Laurent Mekies made a point in an interview this week, or this past week, sorry, Tim. I forget that it's Tuesday already.
Yeah.
he was saying that, listen, Daniel has revealed some of the weaknesses of the car to them. Do you believe that he's actually doing that, or do you think that that's publicity spin to kind of take the heat off of Daniel?
No, definitely. Like, I met with Laurent for one of the first times in Bahrain a couple months ago, and he's pretty transparent, and which is fairly, you know, it's a commonplace for that position as a team principal. You kind of have to be, because reporters know other people within the teams who can get the information when they need it, like top line reporters. And so, yeah, I mean, he's telling us these things because that's what he feels and that's what they need to do. And I mean, at the end of the day, like it hasn't been great for Ricciardo. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a decent race in Bahrain. But I think at the end of the day, you have to give this more time considering it's a new car. And yeah, Yuki Tsunoda's like really gotten to grips with things quite quickly, which is nice to see. And it's something we'll talk about in a minute. But I think when you got a driver like Ricardo on your team, you have to listen to him and you have to take into consideration what he is saying, because he brings that wealth of experience at him. Like, it's just so important. I mean, I can't stress enough how important it is to have experience in this era of Formula One.
And why is that, Tim?
The cars are so complex now. And the fact that, you know, you have Ricardo, who's been in Formula One forever, has driven so many iterations of race car that he's able to pinpoint weaknesses that a driver maybe like Yuki Tsunoda may not be able to feel or find. For Ricardo, he's been able to go through all of that, and to accumulate that wealth of experience and knowledge is extremely important now, because you're dealing with a regulation that is so technical in the way that it keeps the field bunched together, closer together. Teams can't just run away from each other now. They're in a fight for like tenths of a second now instead of seconds. Mm-hmm. So you need that wealth of experience that just unlocks those tiny little milliseconds of performance that eventually, Adam, end up to bigger pieces of performance. Now, granted, Yuki Tsunoda is doing really well, so people will say, well, I mean, he's obviously not doing that much, but he actually would be doing other things to what Yuki's doing. And it may not be something that we see on the television, but it is something that the engineers see behind the scenes, because they're able to look at that layer of data.
So they're, you know, I look at the comments on Daniel Ricciardo's Instagram posts or tweets about Daniel Ricciardo, and losing their minds. It's three races in, right?
Yeah.
And I think the you get basically two sides. You get the side that thinks he's washed, and you get the side that's going, hey, it's getting harder to defend you. Do you think that Daniel Ricciardo's washed?
No. I mean, definitely not.
So if anybody...
hold on a second. I'm sorry. Washed.
As like, in can't race at Formula One levels anymore.
No. I don't believe that whatsoever. If Ricciardo's able to figure out what's going on, if the team is able to help him sort that out, then I think he's going to be able to get back to that level. I think... one of the big things, Adam, I think that's hampered Ricardo. Actually, I shouldn't say one of those things. I should say like a multiple of things would be simply, you know, leaving the Red Bull program, which is fine. You got to do that. You got to go and chase something else. If you know that you're not going to be the number one driver at that team, which we all know that wasn't going to happen once Max arrived on that team, going to Renault, spending 2 years there, doing a decent job when he was at Renault. And that's something I think people forget about, is just how good he was at that team. And
he finished fifth in the driver standings.
Yeah, he was very strong. He was very strong when he was with Renault. Going to McLaren, and then you've got a struggle there with a car that was always sort of on a knife's edge, where Lando Norris could actually extract performance because of the car being on that knife's edge. And that's where Lando can operate the best sometimes. And Daniel just couldn't. And then you've got a regulation change, right?
Yeah.
Into 2022, where he's having trouble not only with the confidence because of the car, but the same characteristics from that older generation of car carries through. So you're still having to not only figure out that fine balance on that knife's edge, try to apply what you do to the car. And at the same time, I don't think the regulation really suited the way Ricardo likes to hustle a race car.
Right.
And I think that's extremely important for people to understand. It's just for a driver to figure out where he was so used to the way the car generated performance for so many years, to a car that now generates performance in a different way. It's heavier. It's harder to rotate. You can't just get it on the nose like you like to have it. So you have to sort of develop a different set of tools. You have to try and engineer the car more towards what you're doing. And I think for Ricardo, that's something that I think that he really needs to work on, is that part of it, trying to understand the car in an engineering way to get it closer to what he likes to do. That's something that Max has been able to do. Like, Verstappen's been able to do it.
to great effect too. Yeah. He's been spectacular. Tim, you know, when we talk about that team, obviously Yuki Tsunoda is going to be under the spotlight. There's going to be a lot of media, a lot of, you know, just like Daniel in Australia, it's actually funny that they go from Australia to Japan, right, you know, right next to each other. How do you think the pressure of Suzuka and the just an amazing amount of support for Yuki Tsunoda, sometimes that can work against you. How do you think he'll handle that this year?
Yeah, I think he's going to be good. Like, I think Sonoda's in a different headspace, Adam. Like, I like now seeing Yuki do well, because I think he's that perfect example of what I talk about when I say young drivers need time in this iteration of Formula One. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes a long time for young drivers to really, really show what they can do. So Yuki showed a ton of promise when he was in Formula 2. And so the team is like, okay, we're going to bring him up. We're going to put him in our junior team and we're going to see how he does. And they put him on these like 1+1 deals where it's like, okay, well, you got 1 year and then we'll pick up your option. And for him, it's all about trying to learn, understand. Like, they had to move him to Italy. They had to get his training program changed differently, because I think they felt they weren't unlocking enough of what his potential actually was. And then for Yuki to understand and to learn the tire, to learn the nuances of how a Formula One car changes over time, that's experience.
Right.
And that is so crucial for a young driver to learn. And I always say, give a driver in Formula One who's new, give them 3 years. Always say that. And I think Yuki is that example, because we're now seeing in his third year him unlocking his own potential. And that's where that experience comes in, mm-hmm. where you know now that, oh, the car's doing this. That means I got to do this to get to this.
Right. And he's impressed a lot of people through three races. Again, I know it's only three races, but Yuki's star is for sure on the rise right now. And in Formula One, all it takes is three more races and then you're at the bottom again. Like, it really, it's such a funny sport that way. Like, it's what have you done for me lately? I don't care that you won a championship 3 years ago. You suck. You're terrible. And it's, you know, these are elite, insane drivers, like top 20 in the world. I wanted to talk. It's so funny that we're talking about, you know, teams that are not mega point scores, right? Because there is really a have and a have not on the grid right now. Basically, from Aston Martin up, you got lots of points. From Red Bull, you know, Racing Bulls down, you have almost none. But I think that's where some of these great stories are, because oftentimes when teams are being successful, there's not a whole lot to talk about unless you're Red Bull, and there's a lot of drama off track, and we can get to that, although there isn't as much lately. One thing I really quickly wanted to touch on is the fact that the now formerly Sauber, I don't even know if we can call them Sauber anymore because they've been bought out. But the Audi team, which Audi now owns the full shares of, they were going to do 75%. They now are going to own 100%. They've had pit stop issues, big ones. Valtteri Bottas was held up, I think, 40 seconds in the last race just because of a wheel nut problem. And it seems as though they're going to continue to have these issues. How hard is it to fix pit stop issues? It's not something you often see at Formula One.
Yeah, no, at that it's level. No, it's a good point. It sucks for Valtteri as well, because I mean, he would have scored, I think, pretty decent points in Australia too, if he didn't have the issue that they had. And I think also on top of that, I mean, it shows us that, hey, maybe Sauber's not as bad as we kind of thought they were, which is, you know, an interesting subject, because I think we all kind of thought that, you know, the likes of Sauber, Alpine, Haas, Williams, they were going to be in their own sort of tier way down at the bottom, really far away from that next level of teams. But now we're starting to see that actually that gap is not actually that big. And that's, mm-hmm. that's an interesting thing. But for pit stops, it's like a ballet almost, right? Everybody has to know what they're doing when the cars come in. These guys practice pit stops ad nauseum, Adam. Like, you'll go to a Grand Prix and they have pit stop practice. And that's what they do. They practice pit stops. And they do it again and again and again and again and again until that time of practice is over and, you know, you have to shut it all down. It's funny because that's one of the things that when I get to go to Grand Prix and I get to tour around the garages and stuff like that, I always go to pit stop practice to kind of see how this sort of symphony of tires coming off and tires going on
and limbs and bodies and all things. Yeah.
And you're kind of looking at it and you're just seeing the mass of humanity that's like, you know, ripping things off and putting things on. And you're like, it passes like that so fast. You can't even see what everybody's doing, but you can always see when it's out of rhythm and you can see when someone screws up. And that's the part I like, because you see maybe three corners of the car with all of these crew members on each point of the car. And you see that one point that just makes a little mistake. And then the whole thing is, it just gets thrown off. The pit stop goes from being like 2 seconds to 10, like yes. Nobody's business. It's the most fascinating thing to watch and to see. And it's something that these teams always practice, and they're always practicing it. They're practicing it in the off season to maintain that rhythm. And then once you get in season, they're practicing it on Thursdays, or practicing on Fridays and Saturdays as well. Like it's really cool to see, Adam. Like I always take videos of it and post it on my social media because it's just awesome.
Have you ever done a pit stop like not in the driver's seat?
Oh, never. Yeah. Done a pit stop in a driver's seat, but nothing like F1, right? That's like another sort of, that's another level.
Right.
Like that's
you've
like,
never been out there with the wheel guns, you know, pulling everything off and.
No, I've never done that. Like I've driven into the box and like gotten a change, but that change is not 2 seconds. It was, you know, it was like 30, 40, 50 seconds because it was a bigger car and all that kind of stuff. But
right. That must be painful, by the way, waiting 30, 40 seconds.
I mean, like for a driver, like I'm always thinking about hitting your marks, because the driver plays a crucial role in the car coming into the box and like coming out of the box, right? Like it's, you have to hit your marks as well. Like there's little lines drawn on the ground that the driver can sometimes look for. For F1, it's a little different because they have the front jack. So literally you're coming down pit lane and you're pulling into the front jack. I think for the driver in that respect, you're making sure you're sort of hitting the brake at that same moment that the car is hitting the jack, because you don't want to run your jack guy over. You
know? Right.
Like, dude, I've seen this a number of times, and George Russell almost like absolutely pancaked his front jack guy when we were in Bahrain during testing. Like, and I was standing behind like the front jack guy. And even I kind of like jumped out of the way to be like, oh God, like he's going to run all of us over. But like, you know, credit to the people who are running the front jack, because that's actually not an easy thing, because you got a car coming at you at like whatever 50, 60 kph and it's like,
yeah.
And it's like a, like on a dime.
It's like a $5-10 million car too. Like it's not a cheap car.
No, more than that. Yeah. But yeah. Like, I mean, Adam, just picture it, like a car coming at you at that speed.
Oh, it's crazy. I can't imagine. Speaking of Tim, it looks as though, and this story is bubbling under the surface and it's wild. Williams obviously only raced one car in Melbourne because of the fact that Alex Albon crashed. This was widely publicized. They gave him Logan Sargeant's car. I think he did the best he could with it. Yeah. You know, without any protection out there too, without any teammates.
Yeah.
But from what we heard last week, James Vowles was saying he was fairly confident it would be rebuilt for Suzuka. Fairly confident.
Fairly confident, yeah.
Which is, again, like, I mean, James Vowles doesn't speak in absolutes most of the time. He doesn't.
No.
But that did leave room for maybe it's not ready. What do you know?
Yeah. So as soon as Alex had his crash, right, they investigate the car, take a look at it, and it essentially like it's tubbed. So that means that the chassis, the tub of the car, the safety cell, whatever you want to call it, that goes to the dumpster now. It's done. And you can actually fix, if it's not too bad, you can actually fix them now, which is interesting, because back in my day, like back when I was racing, it's kind of like you tubbed a car, it's not coming back. Like that's it. And you've basically bought yourself a brand new broken chassis that
cool.
you can take home with you, and you own that now, and you pay for the crash damage. It's a little different in F1, but it's it got shipped back to Williams headquarters and arrived last Monday. So following the Australian Grand Prix, it arrived in Williams headquarters the next day at like 2 a.m.
Okay.
And they were able to start to work on it as soon as it arrived. Like Vals had crew members at Williams HQ to get to receive the car at 2 a.m. and start working on it. So they've been working on this thing. And we heard from James last week. He said that, you know, that the car should be ready to go for Japan. But it doesn't sound like, Adam, they're going to have a backup again. It's right. So, like whatever. And that's another level of problem. And maybe some people might not understand the fact that once you, for Williams, that doesn't have that infrastructure that we've always talked about, the strength of that, you're basically holding up having new parts developed, and you're also holding up development of potentially a brand new chassis because you're fixing old parts mm-hmm. on your race car. And so that, for Williams, kind of throws a wrench into those things. So maybe they don't get an upgrade, you know, for Imola because of what has happened here and the fact that they're trying to build a third car. That is such a huge issue for a team like Williams, Adam, because it slows everything down, and then you don't follow through with your upgrade schedule. And so it sounds like they're going to have two cars for Japan. That shouldn't be the issue. That shouldn't be an issue. What the issue will be is potentially that third chassis.
And do you think that the owner of Williams, Dorlinton Capital, do you think they look at this and go, okay, like we have a really valuable property here. The asset is on the rise. The team mm-hmm. performance is on the rise. We got a good driver in Alex Albon. We're still waiting to see on Logan Sargeant. We know he's a good driver. He's in F1, but you know, can he perform at the F1 levels? And you know, we got a good team principal who is leading the way for this new era of Williams. Are we supporting them enough? Are we investing enough so that these guys can perform to the level that we need them to?
And I mean, it does sound like Dorlton has given them that investment. I remember when we were in, we were at the British Grand Prix, and I remember James, you know, talking to us about simply it wasn't the case of not having enough money. Like, he felt that they have enough money to inject into infrastructure. So capital expenditure was a huge issue and huge topic at that time. And that's something that James was fighting for within the regulation, because he had gone in and seen, like, we have equipment that's so old that
yes.
it can fail at any time. And he's like, I'm used to coming from, when he was at Mercedes, he's like, I'm used to coming from a factory that had the best equipment and had backups of that best equipment. And the thing with these regulations and what you can spend in your factory is almost like a cost cap there too, was the fact that they can only spend so much. And for James, it wasn't even close. Like, it wasn't enough. Like, some pieces of equipment were costing the amount of what the CapEx was at. And so for right. James, he had to go in, lobby, fight for some room that he could actually just say, hey, look, like, we need to invest XYZ dollars. We have that money. And so, Adam, that's coming from Dorlton, right? Like,
right.
I mean, Dorlton.
And he was successful in that lobbying, right? They did kind of lift some of those caps.
Yeah, they did. So the capital expenditure for them has expanded, which he's gone out and started to get new and better equipment. It's just getting it, bringing it in, integrating it into their system, and that takes years, right?
Yeah, and I think it takes years for engineers to fully understand things sometimes.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's a great point.
These are not, you know, it's not like it's funny. Back in the day, the way manufacturers of anything, not cars, but anything, looked at where they would put a factory is, does the population in that area understand how to build what we're trying to build? Yep. Are they educated on that? And to a certain extent, they still do that. So, you know, it does take a little bit of time for these engineers to kind of figure it out and how to maximize their contribution through that. And so, it's fascinating stuff. Now, Tim, one of the things that in the salacious rumor department, which I love about Formula One and which we will always cover, is Fernando Alonso. There is there was talk this week, and again, you got to remember that this Spanish language newspapers, Italian language, Dutch language, French language, British papers, they're all known for being very, very salacious, headline grabbing, pulling people in. So you never know what to trust. But Fernando Alonso's contract is up at the end of the year. He's still racing great as of this point. He has said on record, I got to figure out at the end of the year if I'm still, like, if I still want to do this, because it's a lot. The word is now that his agent, and I believe that's Flavio Briatore, is pushing hard for that second Red Bull seat. Now, whether or not, that would track with who Flavio Briatore is. And if you don't know who that is, we don't have time to go into it, but the guy's he's a pretty big name in Formula One and has been a part of a lot of stuff. Flavio, it tracks with something that Flavio would do. What do you think about a Fernando Alonso Red Bull union? And do you think it's possible?
I think, well, like Adam, you know, Formula One, anything's possible, right?
Yeah.
But I just don't know if he would want to play number two to Max, because honestly, anybody who's going there, that's the situation. That's what you're in. And I don't care. I don't care how good you are, right? Like, you have to remember that it's kind of like that sort of Helmut Marko's sort of area when it comes to like the drive. And Max is like the favorite, and it's kind of, how are you going to, no matter how good you are, how are you going to usurp him? How are you going to usurp Max Verstappen?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I mean, he's Fernando Alonso. Would he not believe that he could?
I don't think anybody could, like, usurp Max at this moment. He's just, one, he's at the top of his game, right? Yeah. Two, he has the backing from the whole team. Like, this is kind of why Daniel Ricciardo said, see you guys, like, I'm going to go down to Renault, try my hand there, see what happens, because I know I'm not going to be the number one driver here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Red Bull's kind of built their program up so you have that number one driver, then you have that sort of 1B, 2A driver who will just be behind your number one and is going to be able to protect and do whatever and help you win a Constructors' Championship and then help your number one win a driver's title. And so I just don't, like, I've seen the stories. I don't know if I necessarily think that would be a great spot for Fernando. But again, like, Flavio has been seen with Toto Wolff. And, you know, I saw Flavio speaking with a bunch of the Aston Martin people when we were in Bahrain. And so, like,
so he's
making the rounds.
He's making the rounds. And as he should, that's what a good agent does. Right.
Yeah,
and I wonder, Tim, you know, does Fernando become an option for Red Bull if they lose Verstappen? Because as much as that chat has quieted down,
that would make more sense.
And that hasn't gone away, right? Like, that, you know, that's still entirely possible. We have Max Verstappen on commenting today, and you sent this to me, Tim, about the big risk that they've taken for 2026 in developing their own powertrain with Ford. Obviously Ford wanted to get back into the sport. They were in it with Jag up in, I think, till 2004, 2005,
yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then
Red Bull
took them over.
Yeah. So it's interesting because it'd be Ford coming back to its old team, but there is a risk inherent in that, and I think Max needs to consider that.
100%. This is something, Adam, that kind of came up mid last season. A big part of it was, I can't remember the exact wording that Verstappen had used, and same with like Christian Horner when they were in the FIA press conference, but essentially it sounded like once the engine got to a certain threshold of speed, same with the battery, you know, they would have, essentially every team was going to have trouble keeping that top end speed going down a really long straightaway because the battery would run out of juice.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it's like, okay, well, you're going to be lifting off when you're on a straightaway, when in racing, you never do that. And this right. is what you would be doing. And it kind of raised the eyebrow of like Toto Wolff and everybody else being like, whoa, like you're having that problem. Like we're not having that problem. That's where this whole thing sort of started to snowball. But the rumor is that, you know, Red Bull powertrains, which is also something that's going to be new for them, mm-hmm. building their own power unit, is having issues with the 2026 engine regulation. Now, for those who don't know, you know, Red Bull never made engines before, ever. They always bought them. And in 2026, they made the decision that they were going to open up their own power unit sort of supply chain and build their own engines, power units, from 2026 onwards. So they never would run into issues again where they got into it with an engine developer or a power unit manufacturer and not have a competitive engine. And that's something that they faced in the 2014 season all the way through to Honda came on board.
Yeah.
So
the Renault years.
Yeah. So for this particular team, they went and they opened up their own power unit building facility, and you know, Christian Horner went out and really grabbed some very creative individuals from other teams to help with that, to help them bring that online, to help them build the engines. And Ford sort of came on board to assist them in a way. It's not a full-blown works division. You know, it's still going to be a Red Bull powertrains, air quotations, with Ford badging on it. And who knows where they could go with that, right? Like, could they start to get into the automotive sector? Could they make cars? Hmm. Could they make engines or hybrid engines for road-going vehicles? Could they, you know, sell those to car companies who maybe don't want to develop a hybrid power unit, but just want to maybe lease something from it? I mean, there's so many possibilities here that this could potentially open up for them as a business. So it was interesting to hear when they were talking about that last mm-hmm. year. And that's sort of where this story has come from, with like, hey, is Red Bull going to have issues with their own power unit that they're going to bring to the track in 2026? And then if you're Max Verstappen, how does that affect you? Do you go, you know, you're on this roll of winning championships. Does that now throw a wrench into your plans?
Right. And we've seen it happen. Seen it happen. Regulations change. Mercedes has never been the same.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a great point, Adam. I mean, like when you look at it, it's like regulation changes they've either excelled some teams or they've really like held them back and pulled them back. And it's an interesting topic because when we've seen, I mean, all of the things that have happened at Red Bull over this season so far, and, you know, you have the grumblings of Max and his dad and everything that was going on there. And then, you know, people start to factor in like, oh, what's the engine program looking like now? Is that also something that could deter Max from, you know, fulfilling his contract with the team? I mean, these are all questions that we don't have answers to. I think at the end of the day, you know, Verstappen will there's probably a 1% chance, Adam, that Max ends up leaving or something, right? Like it's right. not, you're still going to win. You're still going to be in competition for a championship in 2025. So.
Exactly. And that's really what it's about.
Yeah. 100%.
Tim, you know, one of the things that McLaren has been doing and Ferrari and McLaren, I think have been two of the more aggressive teams in terms of updating who they're bringing on board. They want real talent, and you could see it come out in both of their cars. Ferrari and McLaren cars, I think, you know, over the last couple of years have been a pretty steady trajectory, especially since, you know, Fred Vasseur took over in Ferrari and Andrea Stella in at McLaren, right? There's been a real uptick. You know, both of those teams are really competitive again. One thing that I think everybody was really excited about, if you really know the technical side of things, technical director David Sanchez and McLaren have parted ways. Now, Sanchez started his role 3 months ago, and he was hired from Ferrari. Andrea Stella attributed to a misalignment in expectations for the departure. What do you know about this story? Because it's a lot more interesting than what it looks like.
Yeah, and this is a bit of breaking news that we're actually getting to, Adam. Like when we went, when we've gone to like tape this, we've kind of just gotten this in the last few hours of this technical shakeup that's happened at McLaren. Now, David Sanchez, he was a big part of Ferrari and their technical department and even their aerodynamic department as well at that team. And McLaren went to great lengths to pull him away from Ferrari and have him at their team. I believe it was last February. So we're going back to like 2023 when they were able to sort of complete that deal. Sanchez then put on gardening leave up until January of this year when he started to work at McLaren under his role. Now, one of the things that McLaren does now, so when Andreas Seidel was at the team, they had James Key, mm-hmm. who was a huge part of making their car. Seidel leaves, goes down to Sauber, is now running that, bringing Audi in. And then you've had Andreas Stella be promoted into the team principal role. You had James Key then leave the team, and Stella implements an interesting technical makeup. Now it's sort of like a three pillared approach to putting a race car together. Now, if you think of it sort of this way, there was a technical director used to be one person overseeing the entire development of a race car. And now some teams, McLaren included, have gone to this sort of three pillared approach. Alpine just did it. Bruno Famin just did that like last month, has set this up, something similar to what Andrea Stella has done. Essentially, it takes away a lot of the workload from one person and it spreads it across three different people in three different departments. Now, what they had developed was Peter Prodromo, who had been at McLaren for a really long time, very talented guy. He would be the technical director of aerodynamics. Then you had Rob Marshall, who they pulled away from Red Bull just recently, mm-hmm. and they put him in a role of technical director for engineering and design. And then David Sanchez was to fill out that tree as technical director of car concept and performance. And it just didn't sound like, from the quotes we were given, like things were really gelling well with the team and what they wanted Sanchez to do. And like you had said, they were quoted as it being sort of a misalignment. And it sounded like it was, they all agreed, David included, that it's just best to part ways with what we're doing. So David could go and look for another job within Formula One, something that he would be really good at. Not saying that he wouldn't be good at this position. I think he may have been looking for just a little bit more, maybe a little bit more in terms of challenge. Maybe mm-hmm. the position that he was sort of coming into wasn't going to be challenging enough. So that means that McLaren's had to sort of restructure this whole thing again. So you mm-hmm. have Rob Marshall, who was the guy they pulled away from Red Bull. Mm-hmm. He switches from the technical director of engineering and design to chief designer. They promote Neil Hoodley. He goes from he leaves the lower ranks. He gets promoted as he's basically deputy to Rob Marshall's former role of technical director in engineering. And then Andrea Stella, who's a team principal, he's going to assume some of David Sanchez's workload. And if we think about all the stuff that Stella has to do already by running an actual Formula One team, Adam, like he's now adding more onto his plate while they go out and they search for someone who can pick up that workload. So it's, you know, we start the season, McLaren's in an okay position, right? Mm-hmm. And but the car doesn't look like it's taken a huge step from what it was last season. And then we get into this season, and then we hear that, like, hey, we're not going to have updates until a little bit later on down the road. Kind of sort of the writing on the wall here that whatever it was that they had tried or attempted to do with Sanchez in that role has kind of held them back with updates to the car and all of these other kind of things. So it's a
it
sounds like it anyways. Now we'll learn more as this week sort of progresses and Stella talks to the media, and we'll get more out of an understanding of what was going on there and how has this affected their development. But yeah, it's a big loss for them, and the efforts that they went to get him, that was pretty huge. Even though some people may look at this and not think of it as a story, internally at McLaren, it's a big deal. Like, that's a very big deal for them.
Well, I honestly walked in here thinking, it's not that big of a story.
Yeah.
And you know, you kind of turned me around on it, because I think the context of the situation is key. Now, who is the greatest technical director of the last 25 years in Formula One?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it depends what we want to
We're talking
label.
About building a car.
Yeah, it depends what we want to label, like, Adrian Newey as, right? Like, if we, like, is he, you know what I mean? Like, he had, like, literally kind of is way above a technical director, but at the same time, like, he has people underneath him that they all kind of oversee the car, and they just report to Newey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they all kind of sit there and they make a consensus over what they should do, directions that they should go in. The thing with Newey is that he really gives his employees a lot of power to explore ideas. I think that's one of the things that makes him a good leader in that department, is the fact that he allows his employees to just experiment, see where things go. And I think when you get to other F1 teams, you may not get that flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things with Newey, right? Like, when he was given free reign at Red Bull Racing, it was like, dude, do whatever you want. Just get us a fast car.
And and that's why he's so great. Do. He also seems just like a really good guy. In the salacious rumor department, Tim, Lawrence Stroll is purported to have made him an enormous offer last weekend. How true do you think that is?
Hard to say how, like, the
that's Aston Martin's Lawrence Stroll, by the way.
The truth to it, like, I think Lawrence has I think Lawrence has tried to go after Adrian a couple times. You know, maybe he did have a conversation with him during the whatever the report said, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, I think it was, or Australian Grand Prix. I can't remember which one it was that the report had said, but you know, I have an understanding that he has gone after and spoken to Newey before in the past. Now, has he done it recently? I don't have an answer to that. I would assume not, only because, like, we all know Adrian's probably not going anywhere. Like, mm-hmm. it'd be really hard to pull him away from that. Because I think, like, at Red Bull, it's like he gets, like I said, free reign to do what he needs to do to get the job done. And I don't think money's an issue for him either. Like, he's treated pretty good there. So I don't know if that's, I mean, Adam, like, you, like, any work environment, like, if you're treated well, if you're given free rein, you're paid well, why do you need to go anywhere? Right. Like, if I think it's similar things apply here, but I mean, we'll learn more as this week kind of carries out too. Cause Aston Martin's going to be speaking to the media as well. So we'll learn more. This is going to be good.
We will see. Well, okay, Tim. So later on this week, we'll do like a bit of a race preview of Suzuka. Okay. I think it's always good to do on like Thursday, because then you get a sense of, you know, the drivers are there for media day on Wednesday. We're going to get a sense of what everybody's saying, everybody's feeling. It's been a couple of weeks. And you know what? The next few races, we're going to have, you know, weekends in between. So it's the next few races are a bit spread out, which is a bit of a bummer. As a race fan, you want them like back to back, but you can understand why. And then, you know, Tim, we're going to get a Chinese Grand Prix for the first time in a long, long time. And people really like that track.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great track. If you haven't driven it on like F1 23, which I got a free copy of. It's the only reason, because I, okay, ooh. So here's the thing. So Jesse and I did a race, live streamed it on SDPN back in the summertime. And I hadn't been on or driven like a racing game since probably like 2001, 2002, okay. Gran Turismo. And it had been forever since I drove a racing video game. I never do that. And a friend of mine was like, hey, F1 23 is free on the PS Plus store. And I was like, oh, right on. All right. I'll get this. I'll see what it's like. I mean, I may invest like 10 minutes into the thing and be like, nah, this is junk.
Yeah.
So I got it. And I was like, oh, man, I'm kind of hooked on it now. It's so much fun. But anyways, you can drive the Chinese GP track on it. And like, I had driven that track in a simulator like a long time ago, like an F1 sim. And it was great in that thing. And like, I love that track. I can see why drivers really, really like it, Adam. It's really cool.
And Suzuka's a pretty quick track too.
Oh, Suzuka's awesome, man. That's where F1 car comes to life.
Yeah. So these are the things that like, it's exciting to have these kind of races on the horizon because they're great, great tracks. It's almost like when you're getting ready in the European leg for like Spa.
Yeah.
Right. Another great Silverstone. Great tracks. Great, you know, track, what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see that in the video game too. I don't know. Like you've played F1 20.
F1 games. Yeah. I buy them every year.
Yeah. You can see that, right? When you go to like a street track, but then you go to like a full on road course where an F1 car can do its thing. Like,
yeah.
You can see the difference even with the video game now. And that's wild to me. Right. Cause I like I was saying, like, I'm like so far removed from playing video games with race cars. Now I'm doing it. I'm like, oh yeah, I can see the difference. This is really accurate. This is good.
Yeah, I can't stand Jetta or Monaco. Can't stand them. Like, it's just,
man,
it's so, you're so tight all the time. And then like, for at least in the video game, if you make it through qualifying, I never qualify well in those races in the video game. So, you know, I might qualify like 11th or something, and then you're stuck. Like, you can't get past anybody.
I had to turn all of the assists. Like, I hate the assists. Like, I hate it. So I had to turn all of my assists are off. And so I run F1 23, not
like a driver would.
Yeah. But I run it not at the expert mode because what I found is once you get to the very highest level of AI and difficulty, like, you need a sit down rig. Like, you need a sim. You need one of those Fantech force feedback steering wheels. You need the actual racing pedals. You need the racing seat. You need to feel the car move a bit. And I was just getting smoked. But once I kind of took the difficulty down just a tiny bit and then removed it from the expert to whatever the second most difficult thing was on it, just below expert anyways.
Yeah,
I'm trying to say. Like, then it's like I needed the assist removed. I couldn't feel the car enough. Like, I needed it to slide just a little bit, because when you put all the assists on, you can't. I mean, traction control in that game is a joke. Like, you literally brake, downshift, throw it in the corner, and hammer on the gas. And I'm like, there's no skill in that. Like, what the hell? I'm like, I want to be challenged here.
Well, some of us peasants did not grow up as race car drivers, and that's a lot for us, okay? Especially that chicane out of the tunnel in Monaco. It's brutal. I need the assists, okay?
That's awesome, man. I love it. That's great.
Yeah. So listen, Tim, we're gonna be back in a couple days. We're gonna get rolling. We'll watch all the drama unfold as always. And thank you so much. And let's get into it. Let's get a race going.
Yeah, 100%. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it, man.